Good evening. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found almost every day, lots of days, on blogtalkradio.com. I may sound weird because I'm coming to you from my phone. I'm not logged into my computer through the module because I did a really stupid thing. I decided that what I would do is update and restart my computer at about 5 o'clock. And for some reason, I didn't even think that it could take more than an hour. But Microsoft and Windows updates and all that stuff being what they are, I'm looking at it now as actually restarting. In the meantime, I am coming to you via my phone, via the call-in module. I've got my outline at least, so we got that working for us, which is nice. So anyway, yeah, we're here several days a week, starting Mondays, the Vito Esposito Show, featuring Vito and Big Al, Mamma Mia No Sharia. That's Monday nights, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Wednesdays, you got me, Hank Jones, 6 p.m. Eastern, with Hank Jones Poly Sports, where politics and sports meet, usually not pretty, but sometimes it's not as offensive as other. Saturday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister of Sama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. And Vito will pipe in on other days. I occasionally will when the schedule and the let's put it this way. When I'm not paddling and I'm not dead tired, yeah, I'll do a show occasionally on Thursday or Friday. So let's see what's going on. I'm hanging out in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost. My adorable mini Aussie was fed just after 5 p.m., so she's theoretically happy. My beautiful wife is over in acoustic Hankland doing calls all day, conference calls, other managers. They sit around and, well, they work hard. I shouldn't say that, but they seems to me they don't work as hard as I do sometimes, but that's just me. That's just my my own personal observations. As I've said, I'm going to begin my shows every week and end them with this statement. Barack Obama orchestrated or covered up the circumstances of the death of Tafari Campbell. They're trying to block me because of that, so be it. If you disagree with that, change my mind. At least for a while you won't be able to because my computer's restarting and all that stuff, so I'm going in this way. So today's first internet laughing from the Babylon Bee, it's a pretty good one. New squat B&B service helps find perfect homes for squatters to steal. next one's also from the Babylon Bee. Mexican robots surge across the border to take new fast food jobs at California kiosks. I shouldn't laugh because it isn't actually that funny. It is, but it isn't. So let's get to our obits that I missed last week because 3 out of the last 5 weeks, as Vito pointed out, I've been bumped off of here. So this one definitely splits, folks. On Wednesday, 2 weeks ago today, Wednesday the 10th, former Heisman Trophy winner, NFL record setter, and former track and field world record holder, co-holder, O.J. Simpson passed away from cancer at the age of 76. Did I also mention, albeit he was never convicted, he was pretty much a murderer. As I said, he was never convicted. In fact, several black jurors said they voted not to convict him. It was a matter of race. Pretty much convicted him in the eyes of many. In any event, as a football player, his talent was unquestionable. He had size, speed, quickness, vision, overall good field awareness. And he was also, despite many people's hatred of him, a good commentator when he would be a color analyst. His public persona revealed a man that was arrogant, flippant, and at times rather unsympathetic, frankly. But make no mistake, the man was one hell of an athlete. He took off one spring practice from USC in order to run track, and he helped set a world record in the 4x110 yard, in other words, the 440-yard relay, running pretty much an unheard-of time, at least for a collegiate team at that time, of 38.4 seconds. That USC team, though it included a Jamaican, who actually ran on the Jamaican Olympic team that finished fourth in the Mexico City Olympics in 1968, they would have finished at no less than bronze medal position. He had a stellar college football career, won the 1968 Heisman Trophy in a landslide. He finished runner-up in 1967 to Gary Beben of UCLA, and many thought he should have won it then. He did not, so be it. Beginning his pro career with the then lowly Buffalo Bills, he had a couple of soft years, I guess you'd say, not great years. Then he led the league in rushing, the NFL, in 1972. And then in 1973, he went on to become the NFL's first 2,000-yard rusher, included a single-game rushing record of 250 yards in a single game. He later increased that to 273 yards in a single game. He still holds the NFL record for average rushing yards per game for that 1973-2000-yard season with 143.1 yards per game. He's the only person to rush for 2,000 yards in a 14-game or less season. Suffice it to say, most people view him as an egomaniacal thug. As I said, most. But those who watched him play cannot and will not deny his talent on the field. You just can't. Following day, we lost pro wrestler Tony Jones at just 53. He wrestled mostly on the independent circuit with a couple stops, all pro wrestling, XPW, WWE. We also lost Hawaiian-born sumo wrestler Aki Bono, born Chad Rowan. He was the first non-Japanese wrestler to reach the rank of Yokozuna, the highest rank in sumo wrestling. He was 6'8" tall, weighed in at over 500 pounds. He was one of the tallest and heaviest sumo wrestlers ever. Now, he later had a stint in pro wrestling, including a match WWE at WrestleMania 21. He was just 54. He passed away from heart failure after several years of health challenges. Friday the 12th, we lost former Czech women's discus gold medalist Olga Fikatova at the age of 91. Yeah, they're going to go on still claiming she was a woman, so after 91 years, I guess I'll believe them. We also lost American filmmaker Eleanor Coppola at age 87. As a filmmaker, most of her work was spent documenting the filmmaking career of her rather prolific filmmaking husband, Francis Ford Coppola. Saturday the 13th, we lost actor Ron Thompson at the age of 83. His biggest film role was a dual role of Tony and his presumed son, Pete, in Ralph Bakshi's 1981 animated rotoscope film, American Pop, if you remember that. Great flick. Sunday the 14th, we lost former Major League Baseball pitcher, left-hander Kenny Holzman. He was a World Series champion with the Oakland A's, but he was most beloved for his Chicago Cubs days when he pitched two no-hitters. He remains the most victorious Jewish pitcher in MLB history with 174 wins, nine more than the legendary Sandy Koufax. Monday the 15th, we lost Baseball Hall of Famer Whitey Herzog at 92. He won World Series titles as a scout and coach with the 1969 Mets and as manager with the 1982 Cardinals. We also lost singer Arthur Pucci-Tavares, member of the name that bears his family that bears his band name. He had several hits in the 70s, including More Than a Woman, their version of the Bee Gees tune, both of which appeared on the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. The 16th, we lost former World Series Dodger pitcher Carl Erskine to pneumonia at the age of 97. We also lost former Florida Governor and U.S. Senator Bob Graham at age 87. Bob Graham, born with the proverbial silver spoon in his mouth, he was the epitome of liberal elitist politics, being dumber than a box of rocks, yet somehow not only getting elected as governor and U.S. Senator, but becoming the chair of the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee. Yeah, oh, the irony. To top that off, though, although the beneficiary of the publishing and media empire of Katherine Graham and the Washington Post, he managed to outfumble. This is a buddy of mine that said this. He used to be a lobbyist. He managed to outfumble every lobbyist for the check during his rather mediocre political career. Last Thursday, the 18th, we lost pop gospel singer Mandisa. She was also an American Idol alum at the age of 47. An investigation is ongoing, although foul play is not suspected, apparently. We also lost former college football coach Archie Cooley at the age of 85. He was the architect of, I guess you'd say, of the run-and-shoot style pass attack. He made it famous at Mississippi Valley State in the 1980s, featured, among others, legendary San Francisco 49ers wide receiver Jerry Rice. The Delta Devils, as they were known, quarterback Willie Totten ran the offense, lined up basically with empty backfields. They usually employed no tight ends, using all their eligible receivers as downfield receivers. Finally, we lost legendary Southern rock guitarist Dickie Betts to cancer and COPD at the age of 80. He was the other half of the Allman Brothers band guitar duo with Duane Allman. He wrote what many consider to be their finest ever live performance tune, the instrumental called In Memory of Elizabeth Reed. It appeared on their second studio album, then appeared on their At Fillmore East album, which many still regard as one of, if not the best live albums ever. Later popped up on a different album after the death of Duane Allman, album called Wipe the Windows, Check the Oil, Dollar Gas. They reworked it with C-level pianist Chuck Level and bassist Lamar Williams. So instead of the first guitar solo going to Dickie Betts, they used Chuck Lavelle as the first solo, and then Betts cleaned up and brought it home with his guitar solo after Greg Allman came in on that organ interlude in the middle. Great tune. If I can get logged in later, I'm going to play that as part of my break because I think that is one of the greatest songs ever. Dickie Betts, by the way, also wrote the Allman Brothers Band hits Jessica and Ramblin' Man. Believe it or not. Yes, he did. Okay, so I'm logging in now. We're going to see if anybody's there. I was obviously able to get in on the phone link, so let's see what happens here. Let's just see. So I'm going to go to the studio. Hopefully I'll see y'all. Might even message Vito and see if I can get in on the, I got several. I got Hawkeye Mike listening. I got Boy the Alaskan listening in. Sue from New Mexico's listening. Let's see who's in the chat, if anyone's in the chat room. Maybe nobody could get into the chat room because I didn't go in there. I don't know. We'll see. In any event, Saturday, we lost former Rams quarterback Roman Gabriel. He was the first Filipino-American quarterback in the NFL. He was 83. He was two-time All-American at North Carolina State. He then starred for both the Los Angeles Rams and the Philadelphia Eagles. He was actually the NFL MVP with the Rams in 1969 and then the NFL Comeback Player of the Year for the Eagles in 1973. Monday, we lost singer-songwriter Chan Romero at age 82. He's best known for one song, basically, Hippie Hippie Shake. which actor Brian Brown embarrassingly belted out in the 1988 movie Cocktail with Tom Cruise. I know what Brother Tommy would say. He'd say, let's do it. Let's really do it. Yesterday we lost Scottish accordionist Fergie MacDonald at age 86. I never heard of him. Don't know any of his stuff, but hey, it doesn't get much more Scottish accordionist than the name Fergie MacDonald. Really doesn't. Fergie MacDonald. I mean, that is just that's priceless. It really is. Today, we lost New Jersey Democrat Congressman Donald Payne. He had suffered a heart attack back on the 6th of April, never really recovered. Thoughts and prayers to his family. I know he's a Democrat, and I shouldn't really care, but no, you never want to mock the loss of someone. In addition to them, please remember to keep in prayer the friends, family, and Felicia Goodson, former guest on this show, as well as the widow of David Vasquez. David, my friend Rick called a couple weeks ago. David passed away after some health challenges, health issues, cancer, and some other stuff. Don't forget, my friends, at Alliance Communications of Central Florida, please, as they are Central Florida's premier 24-hour messaging and answering service. They do work for hospital clinics, medical clinics, service businesses, surveys. They also work with remote staff. So if that's your gig, consider that. Give them a call or check them out on the web. 800-555-3738, or look them up on the web. AllianceCommunications.com. Another thing that Sue asked me to bring up, and so I'm going to at this point, there is a organization called Vietnam Veterans Memorial Foundation, or Memorial Fund. And they are placing flowers on Father's Day to remember Vietnam veterans. And they are doing it under several options, basically. And I'm finding the thing. I'm finally logged back onto my Twitter account, et cetera. And so it's vvmf.org/father-day. And so what they will place flowers, I believe, I assume on grave sites, and yellow roses are for those unaccounted for, missing in action, prisoners of war that were never recovered. Red roses will be for those killed in action, and white for those who passed away after the war ended. It's $5, sponsors a rose, placed at the memorial site. It might be at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial as well, because looking at the photo, it looks like it will be at the memorial in Washington, D.C., which is fantastic. And it's vvmf.org/fathers. That's plural, fathers-day/. I'll tell you why that's important. That was really, I mean, I guess you could sort of say Korea was another war that probably we abandoned our principles or our strategy, our policies, I guess. And I can play it with a Roddy Dangerfield clip, of course, from Back to School. Basically, as he put it, Truman was too much of a pussy whip going and nuke those commie bastards back into the Stone Age. Well, Vietnam, it was much worse. We literally abandoned our people. We didn't allow them to win. We didn't give them the tools to win. We didn't employ the tools to win. Now, one can argue whether that was a place or a war we should have been involved at all. I get that. I don't argue that. But we learned a tough lesson because we abandoned our people. We left people over there. We abandoned people as they came home. We abandoned them after they returned. I know movie dramatization is not always exactly the way it went, but I would say the movies such as The Deer Hunter, Coming Home, even the Rambo, First Blood Rambo movies talk of, you know, showed that how we abandon our soldiers. Now, go on and on, but really, it did bring up, I guess you could say, it did finally make us fully aware of PTSD. We kind of knew about it. We called it battle fatigue. We kind of knew those things could happen, but this really brought it to light. Now, we can go on and talk about everybody claiming PTSD and the Me Too movement, all those kinds of things. But with our Vietnam vets, it's a real thing. And we let them down. Pure and simple, we let them down. Before I get to a couple quickies, another internet laughy. This one's funnier when you see the picture. It says, Biden furious to be called home from beach just because World War III is starting. You got to see the picture. It's literally like a beach umbrella and Dopey Joe sitting in a beach chair falling asleep. I mean, this guy's a mess. This guy is a mess. You know, I did a special show with Vito last night where I mentioned, Vito always has said, you know, Democrats circle the wagons when one of theirs gets in trouble. We Republicans, I should say, or conservatives, Republicans, eat their young. And so I said, on that note, shouldn't we be observing a moment of silence for Uncle Bozy? Uncle Bozy, this whole Uncle Bozy speech. Now, I got to say something here, folks. I'm not even sure how people were able to deduce the whole cannibal thing. Because when I hear it, I can't understand what the hell he's even saying. I really can't. Brother Tommy and I talked on the phone today. As he pointed out, Dana Perino says, I'm tired of interpreting for this guy, being his translator. I'm always trying to tell people, well, this is what he meant to say, stupid as it was. But, yeah, I'm tired of being the translator for Uncle Bozy. It's ridiculous. It really is. He's just, Amber Finnegan, I call him Uncle Bozy. And from there, I literally, it's like not a clue. Don't know what he said. Not even. Just don't even ask me to say what he said. It just makes no sense. Some quickies. Jonathan Turley points out some of the issues with the Trump hush money trial. He points out a couple glaring issues that he says are pretty damaging to the whole case. Basically, he said, several things. He said the juxtaposition, Trump in a courtroom versus Biden on the campaign trail, could actually help Trump. He says the trial is expected to take weeks. Biden is somehow ramping up his campaign. How that is happening, who knows. But isn't what he says. So this is becoming the split-screen election. Earlier, it was pretty damaging to see the split screen between Trump in different courtrooms. This is even more effective when the other side of the screen shows Biden campaigning in key states like Pennsylvania while Trump's held in the courtroom. And he says it really brings home something that bothers a lot of Americans, including people who don't particularly like Trump, and that is the weaponization of our criminal legal system. He's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. We literally are watching the weaponization, it's the only way to put it really, of our legal system and of our government itself, whether it's the IRS, like Vito and I talk about. He points this out. He says, this is a misdemeanor under state law that had run out. It's literally going back to the 2016 election. They zapped it back to life by alleging there was a campaign finance violation under federal laws that don't exist. He says the Department of Justice doesn't view it this way. And as he said, Trump's legal team laid out some tough factual issues, pointing out how someone else designated something like this as a legal expense. He said, this is what Hillary Clinton's people did. They funded the Steele dossier. They denied it to reporters. They put it as a legal expense. And then when they fought the eventual fine that they received from the federal government, they said, but it was a legal expense. Their campaign did that. He also points out Bragg's case is coordinated with the Justice Department. Michael Colangelo, who once actually worked in the Biden Department of Justice, helped present opening arguments on Monday. So there's that as a quickie. Stephen A. Smith gets in on the act. Stephen A. Smith, this has got to be shocking a few. Stephen A. Smith said, basically, you can't beat him. He said former President Trump, his criminal trial is an effort to prevent him from winning the upcoming election. He said, it's much ado about nothing. He says, to my liberal friends out there, all you're doing is showing that you're scared that you can't beat him on the issues and the merits. Why he's able to keep saying it's a political campaign against me. That's why he's able to keep saying they can't beat me in the election, at the polls. Stephen A. Smith. Bragg asked a judge to hold Trump in contempt for gag order violations. He's also been told he can't leave. He's got to be there in court. He cannot leave. Meanwhile, a juror is able to leave early for a dental appointment. Even Democrat Representative Ro Khanna from California said it's basically a distraction, and it's the weakest case they could be bringing. And Dopey Joe literally used both sides of his mouth this past week. This clown... So I'm going to talk a little bit more about it later, but they basically inserted language into Title IX that they had no right to insert. They literally changed it to gender identity and not sex or not gender. They changed it to gender identity. Well, then Dopey Joe tweets this out or X posts this. Women in sports continue to push new boundaries and inspire us all. But right now, we're seeing that even if you're the best, women are not paid their fair share. I'm going to talk about this later as well. He says, it's time that we give our daughters the same opportunities as our sons and ensure women are paid what they deserve. Oh, the fucking irony. He literally said that. He literally said that. After literally going in and changing the language in Title IX to allow basically men to compete in women's sports. Effing kidding me. My buddy Steve texted me something. He pointed out, very effective and very true, the military abandonment didn't end with Vietnam. As he put it, how about the criminal abandonment in Afghanistan, leaving behind Americans and their supporters? But worse than that, we left behind Ghanis who worked with us. We abandoned Afghanis who risked everything to work with us, aiding us in trying to liberate that country. Moving on to actual news. This is one good one. David Cameron Hogg, was getting into it on social media with a former Chinese, or I shouldn't say a former, a Chinese immigrant. And she said she's a Chinese immigrant who survived communism under Mao. 40 million people were starving to death. So she asked David Camera Hogg, can you guarantee me a gun owner tonight? Our government in the U.S. in Washington, D.C. will never become a tyrannical government. Can you guarantee that to me? He says, David Camera Hogg said, there is no way I can guarantee that any government will not be tyrannical. This is why he's saying banning assault weapons, which is a euphemism, as some many point out. She said, well, then the debate on gun control is over because I will never give up my guns. She's right. Now, I have a family member, got into it recently, who was, we were talking about voter ID, and he said, oh, well, now, take voter ID off the table because there's always been some form of election fraud, and there will always be some form of election fraud. Okay. So using that logic, there's always been gun violence, and there will always be gun violence. Check effing mate of that one. So yeah, David Camera Hogg gets owned there. Here's a definition of sanity. Seriously, this is one definition of sanity. A judge has upheld Georgia's voter citizenship requirements. I know, it's hard to believe, but it does happen sometimes. A judge upheld Georgia's voter citizenship verification requirements, ensuring that only U.S. citizens vote in elections. And even the Secretary of State said it's critically important to secure and accurate elections. It was a legal challenge to their voter citizenship requirements. The judge kept it in place, cross-checking citizenship status to determine voter eligibility. She issued a ruling on April 11th that dismissed the lawsuit brought by a coalition of advocacy groups that claimed Georgia's requirements unfairly discriminated against naturalized citizens who are more likely to be people of color. It's a three-day trial. She ruled that all four of the plaintiff's claims, including that the protocols violated multiple federal laws, the Constitution, and unfairly burdened the right to vote, were dismissed. Sanity. Now, I realize other states are doing different stuff, but basically sanity. How can you argue against voter ID? I just don't get it. Krusty the press secretary, no, not Krusty the clown, Krusty the press secretary, Colin Jean-Pierre, weighed in on OJ's death a couple weeks ago when she was asked about it. And Krusty, do you know if there was any reaction from the president to O.J. Simpson's death? Do you know if he ever crossed paths? And if so, how or when? Krusty said, our thoughts are with his families during this difficult time, obviously with his family and loved ones. And I'll say this, I know that they have asked for some privacy, and so we're going to respect that, and I'll just leave it there. No condolences for family and friends of Nicole Simpson or Ron Goldman, just as they had no sympathy for the family of Lincoln Riley. Tell you what, she's a mess. Weird stuff from Bill Maher the other night. Bill Maher, talking about abortion, he says, it's murder, and I'm okay with it. So he admitted abortion kind of is murder. There's a panel discussion Friday on his HBO show Real Time. If you've ever watched that. And like Brother Tommy and I were talking, he can sometimes sound semi-lucid, gushing abortion rights in light of a former president, Donald Trump, saying it should be decided by each U.S. state and not a national ban. He said, a lot of people think it's murder. That's why I don't understand the 15-week thing or Trump's plan of let's leave it to the states. He's saying, you mean so killing babies is okay in some states? That's not what he said, but now when you take it out of context. He goes, I can respect the absolutist position. I really can. I scold the left when they say, oh, you know what? They just hate women, people who aren't pro-choice. They don't hate women. They just make that up. He then something says, they think it's murder, and it kind of is. I'm just okay with that. I am. I mean, there's 8 billion people in the world. I'm sorry, we won't miss you. That's my position on it. Catholic League's Bill Donahue said, Marr's sincerity is appreciated, if not his promotion of violence. He knows, as every honest person who agrees with science knows, that abortion is the taking of innocent human life. Thomas Malthus, who was the most famous person to warn of overpopulation, was opposed to abortion as well. So there's a reason for that. Thomas Malthus was an Anglican minister. Bill Maher is an atheist. Now, here's the thing. Morgan and Tet, who were on the discussion, admitted they are fans of abortion rights, but when Maher said he was okay with the killing of innocent kids, they branded his position quite harsh. They couldn't explain what was harsh about it, though. Yeah, it's never going to go away. It's never going to go away, just so you all know. Bit of a weird take from Bill Maher. Here's one from some scientists. So some university doctors insist that the guy who lit himself on fire outside the Israeli embassy was not crazy. Seriously, the guy who lit himself on fire is not crazy. Dr. Ragda Isar and Afaf Mustafa made remarks praising Aaron Bushnell's self-immolation protest. This is in UCLA. This is not the guy that lit himself up at the last week. Or maybe it was. It says, yes, he carried a lot of distress, but does that mean the actions he engaged in are any less valid? He also appeared to cross some ethical lines, according to some experts who talked of the Free Beacon. Psychiatry pathologizes non-pathological reactions to a pathological environment or pathological society. This is what Mustafa said. It's considered illness to choose to die in protest of the violence of war, but perfectly sane to choose to die in the service of the violence of war. For mental health professionals to encourage removing the stigma is reckless, one psychiatrist said. That's what's going to happen as we have these continued organized, paid-for protesters. Telling you, as long as we continue to have those, we're going to have these nutcases doing this stuff. We are. Get used to it. Get used to it. One from the Epoch Times that kind of states the obvious, and yet. So evidently there is some, you know, these pollsters come out. Negative views of government soar under President Biden compared to President Trump. The share of Americans expressing a negative view of the federal government soared in his third year in office. A new poll showed a 10% drop in favorability compared to roughly the same point in President Trump's term. Just 22% of U.S. adults polled in December 2023 had a favorable opinion of the federal government, according to a Pew Research poll that was published on April 12th. That's a 10-point drop compared to the 32%. Who had a similar view in August of 2019 during President Trump's third year in office. Independents are also souring on Dopey Joe. Republicans gave the federal government an 11% rating which is a 30% drop compared to 2019. Still about 10.75 points too high, but 26% of Democrats give the government a positive rating. During the third year of the Trump presidency, 32% think favorably under Biden. Does show that, didn't really say where independents stood or undecideds, but the latest poll from The Economist, U.gov, shows that independents track closely with Republicans in terms of their strong approval of the job President Biden is doing. 5% of independents, 3% of Republicans. Who are those 3% or 5% that have a favorable view of the job Joe Biden is doing? That's what I'd like to know. American Liberty News featured a story I have not seen anywhere else, and it has me asking several questions. So a foreign official's son was killed in a drive-by shooting in Houston at a convenience store, a black Cadillac Escalade, in which a Dominican Republic government official's son was sitting, was riddled with gunfire. As the smoke cleared, and so did the three suspects, the government official's son was dead and another man was critically injured. Happened on April 1st. Two of the men from the vehicle went inside to grab some items. When they returned to the SUV, that's when the attack began. That's when three men pulled up in two vehicles, a silver Dodge Charger and a silver Mercedes-Benz. Model not specified. Who cares? Holding what appear to be AK-style rifles with stocks removed. All three men described as Hispanic. So it gives me these questions. First, what kind of foreign official is this guy? How does his son become the target of a gangland-style or cartel-style murder in the United States? Another question I have, who's handling this? If it's the Houston police or is it the FBI? Either way, I'm not expecting them to catch the killers because I don't expect anything out of Houston to be all that effective, and I certainly don't expect the FBI to be that effective. Do we actually owe the Dominican Republic any sort of a resolution on this? It would seem to me that gangland / cartel types of activity should be met with one response, kick them all out. How much more of this is happening that we aren't hearing about? I got to believe countries like El Salvador, Colombia, et cetera, have some pretty shady, quote-unquote, diplomats. Are we required to allow them on our soil? It seems to me if I need a background check to buy a gun, maybe we could do a background check on non-citizens that are coming here under the guise of diplomacy. And really, maybe we should only really be allowing diplomats from places with whom we are actual solid allies. A trade partner isn't the same as an ally. Frankly, what the cartels do, although some of our government people are involved, that's not trade anyway. That's contraband. It's called crime. According to this story from hotair.com, Dopey Joe did approve of Iran's attack on Israel, the drone attack. Supposedly, he gave the go-ahead to Iran, but supposedly also said, within certain limits. Iran informed Turkey in advance of its planned operation against Israel. The U.S. conveyed to Iran via Turkey that the operation must be within certain limits. Now, I've heard some interesting takes on this, one of which is that Iran had to strike back in some way without it going. It was after the killing of Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a top commander in the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, and six others at the Iranian consulate in Damascus back on the 1st of this month. Iran couldn't let it go without retaliation, and Israel knew that as well. But Iran basically told everyone what they were doing. Had to be expecting that they were going to be shot down. And they called it a conclusion to the dispute and that they had no interest in further hostilities. It was basically for show. Supposedly the U.S. signed off on the attacks, saying within certain limits. Now look, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I believe most of the Arab world, I'm not talking about certain elements within Saudi Arabia, but I believe most of the Arab world is no longer sympathetic to the Palestinians or the Hamas or Gaza or whatever you want to call them. And I don't believe they're sympathetic to Iran. Frankly, Iran isn't really the Arab world. It's the Muslim world, but it is not the Arab world. And it's sad because I've known some really nice people that I've met here from Iran who all but say that it has become a maniacal theocracy that makes no sense. But yeah, I think things are starting to happen, or they're going to happen. NPR suspended their veteran editor whistleblower, Yuri Berliner. Remember, he talked about absence of viewpoint diversity a couple weeks ago. So they suspended him for 5 days without pay, beginning, I guess, 2 weeks ago this Friday. Or maybe it was last Friday. I'm not sure. And he suggested that maybe it's not fair for a taxpayer-funded outlet to be so openly biased. Part two, he resigned. He basically walked away. He resigned from NPR a week ago, after accusing them of the systemic liberal bias. Said they lack viewpoint diversity, and basically said, I am resigning from NPR, a great American institution for years. I don't support calls to defund it. I respect and wish for NPR to thrive and do important journalism in the newsroom where I'm disparaged by a new CEO, blah, blah, blah. He says, I cannot work in a newsroom where I am disparaged by a new CEO whose divisive views confirm the very problem at NPR I cite in my free press essay. NPR in his essay had strayed too far left politically. So here's something nobody in media is really discussing, any media. What could that be? How about the fact, like I said, and he did mention it, NPR is funded in large part by our government, i.e., by us. This isn't a case of millions or billions of dollars in ad revenues, although they do get ad revenues, or the fact that it's a nonprofit created by an act of Congress. This was about Fox News or CNN or other legacy media from the major broadcast networks. Nobody would care beyond the tabloid level aspect of the whole thing. This is a news organization that, as a nonprofit, should be completely unbiased. In fact, by law, a 501c3 cannot overtly advocate for any candidate or party, which means, of course, it can't overtly advocate against any candidate or party. Now, look, we've all heard it in some way, shape, or form in our churches, and I'm not talking about just liberal clergy. I'm talking about all clergy. A lot of clergy, not all clergy. That's a wrong assertion. Much clergy, a lot of clergy. have gotten political, overtly political. They try not to, but they can't help it. They're human, after all. But theoretically, no, that's a no-no. Well, the church isn't a 501c3. It is a not-for-profit. The church doesn't even file a tax return like a 501c3 does. 501c3 is not allowed to be political. You lose your tax-exempt status when you do that. I talked about it on Vito's show a little bit. I have had extensive experience working within the nonprofit, not as an employee, as a volunteer in a service organization that was gifted by eminent domain with a very large sum of money for a small service club. And I was part of the creation of our foundation's, for lack of a better term, grant-making apparatus. Because I stupidly said to the president of the foundation while I was on the board, we better be careful because people are going to come out of the woodwork wanting money. He said, perfect, you can be in charge of getting that set up. So, yeah, I did. I learned. I went to other nonprofit leaders in the Orlando area and learned. Because I sure as hell wasn't going to, you know, walk into it with eyes closed and doing wrong things and all that. It's very serious. And when you're part of something like that, you have a real responsibility. You have a stewardship responsibility. It's not about helping those that you feel most sorry for. Conversely, it's not about what kind of return do you get on your grant-making investment. So I know people are big into doing that. Bill Gates is big into doing it. Buffett, Bezos, some of those, they try to look for quote-unquote returns. Now, in some cases, I get it. You want to make sure that your money is not going to blow up buses in Tel Aviv or it's not going to, dictators and corrupt dictators who are just going to take that money. Of course not. But even so, as an example, we would always get calls after a hurricane or a fire or a flood or whatever. You know, can you guys help out? Look, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a normal reaction. You see an organization that has money. But that's not, you know, that's disaster funding. That's rescue, so to speak. That's the rescue phase. And that's not long-term funding. There are different frankly, as one guy told me who ran a large community type foundation here in Central Florida, he made a very good point. He said, if everyone in the United States who has a checking account would write a check for $10 to the American Red Cross at the beginning of each year, Red Cross would never have to put out pleas for, you know, and beg for money after disasters. It wouldn't have to. Simple as that. If every bank account in the United States made out a check to the American Red Cross for $10 at the beginning of the year, any disaster that came up, they wouldn't need to do a thing. The money would be there. But can anyone tell me, with any semblance of a straight face, that NPR has ever been unbiased? Look, even some of the biased ones are good. Gwen Ifill was good. I respected the hell out of Gwen Ifill. A hell of a woman. May she rest in peace. But, you know, she was not, you could see bias there. She was better than most, but NPR and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting have been in the tank for the DNC for so long, it's hard to remember when it was actually called unbiased by anyone who thinks for himself or herself. Here's some highlights about NPR. So, it was established by an act of Congress. It comes from dues and fees paid by member stations, underwriting from corporate sponsors, annual grants from the publicly funded Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Now think about who a lot of these corporate sponsors are. Most of the member stations, your local, are owned by nonprofits or by schools, colleges. Now, they do operate independently of any government or corporation, supposedly, and supposedly have full control of its content, supposedly. Although, as Yuri Berliner says, that's meh. They manage the National Public Radio Satellite System, called NPR. Its official name, its legal name, is National Public Radio. It was the congressional passage of the Public Broadcasting Act of 1967, signed by Lyndon Johnson, and established the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which also created PBS for television. First board of directors was chaired by Bernard Mays. So let's hear about Bernard Mays. He was born in London. Taught Latin and Greek and history. He was ordained as an Anglican priest. He emigrated to the United States in 1958, became an Episcopal worker priest. So why was this guy put in charge of NPR? In 1991, he co-founded the LGBT Faculty, Staff, and Graduate Student Association at the University of Virginia. Why? Well, he was openly gay himself. Now, he did some stuff. He founded the San Francisco Suicide Prevention Hotline. Can't argue with that. Can't go against that. He organized a sexuality study center for the Episcopal Diocese of California. Now, look, I'm not knocking the LGBT community here. But let's just call it what it is. Even though, frankly, he should have been learning that in seminary. Now, look, I'm not saying let's hate on gays. Not what I'm saying at all. But look where the advocacy would be. Advocacy. It's not supposed to advocate for that. Yeah, you know, I mean, are we surprised that this has come about? How can we be? Dopey Joe. You know, he's come up with it. The Uncle Bosey one, I still don't understand. Uncle Bosey, I literally don't understand what he said. But he was recently doing a speech in Wisconsin about student loan forgiveness. He claimed that he was the first person in his family to attend college. Problem with that? It's not true. Because he bragged several times in the past about his grandfather going to college. Unbelievable. He admitted there are Finnegans from his mother's family that went to college. In fact, his father went to Johns Hopkins briefly. Does this guy just makes it up as he goes along. He's just he's not a psychopath. I mean, he's beyond any, he's not there. He's just not there. I mean, it's simple as that. But, man, then shut him up or something. Get him a muzzle. And now Senate Democrats are going after political opponents. They're going after a conservative advocate. Gee, what a shock. Was anyone surprised by this? Dick Durbin subpoenaed federal Supreme Court ethics. Leo says he doesn't intend to comply. Wait. Because I'm not going to capitulate to Durbin's lawless support of Senator Sheldon Whitehouse and the less dark money effort to silence and cancel political opposition. Yeah, why would they be? President Trump basically exposed Judge Juan Merchan, as I said, the man who literally is forcing him to stay in court but is letting jurors leave for dental appointments. He'll have to be in court for 4 days a week for the next several weeks. Put out, nothing like this has ever happened before. He says it should never have been brought. He says this is an assault on America, and that's why I'm very proud to be here. This really is an attack on a political opponent. Every legal scholar said this case is nonsense. It should never have been brought. Now, Merchan denied a Trump motion for recusal, said he would not consider it again until an appeals court issues a ruling on the matter. That's not, by the way, that's, I'm sure if Mike were to, we're on the phone, and I don't know, since I'm remote, I'm not sure I can take a call, so that's why I'm not doing that if anyone raises their hand. But my guess is no judge would recuse himself unless there's really, you know, something really egregious, I guess you'd say. I just don't see any judge recusing themselves. I think it would always be an appeals court that would have to do it. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. And Jonathan Turley talked about it, but others have too. This is something that even the Department of Justice isn't going after this. And how can they? This one ought to make you puke. Certainly me, an Iowa teacher, Amanda Delzell, she was fired after she reported a colleague for alleged abuse of an autistic student. She used security cameras and sounded the alarm on a fellow educator who allegedly abused a nonverbal autistic student. The Urbandale School Board, that's outside of Des Moines, voted 4-1 to terminate Webster Elementary School teacher Amanda Delzell, her contract, after several months on paid administrative leave. One of her former students reportedly bloodied himself inside a classroom when he slammed his head into the hard floor while the unnamed teacher stood by and failed to intervene. This was back in May of last year. The child is nonverbal with severe autism, among other disorders, that can lead to overstimulation and confusion when there is disruption to his schedule. Many staffers were made aware of the incident, but not the child's parents. Next day, she went in and saw her student's IEP and behavior plan not being followed, and the result was serious injury. She said, I saw his teacher standing over him, allowing him to self-harm and using her foot to push him down the hall, crying out while in the fetal position. The student's IEP and behavior plan had precautions in place in case his behavior got to the point of self-abuse. So his behavioral plan states that any type of situation that is triggered and is banging his head on any object or the ground, an adult will immediately intervene and block his head with the safety cushions. And that's supposed to be followed up with a nurse evaluating him. A school nurse did evaluate the student, later called his mother to inform her that her son had been hitting his head, breaking open a scab on his ear, but was immediately tended to. So the mom received an email from the school informing her that her son's special ed teacher would be out for a few days. The teacher, Amanda Delzell, had repeatedly shared her concerns about the other teacher's behavior with her bosses, but was told that it was under investigation and confidential. That's when she reached out to the child's parents. Then on May 30th, she was notified by another employee that an incident had occurred involving, this is the mother. On May 30th, I was notified by another employee that an incident had occurred involving our son and that they were told not to say anything or speak about it to parents. We couldn't believe it. We didn't know what to do. Can you believe that? She was later reprimanded for telling the parents, and the school board ultimately decided to place her on leave. She reported the alleged abuse because of her love for her job and her students. She says, I think parents need to know that this could happen in their school district. If you lose sight of kids' safety, what are we doing as a district? The parents have filed a civil rights complaint with the Iowa Civil Rights Commission. Vanna Delzell's attorney blasted the school board's decision. Says, we are not done with this fight. We will continue to work to hold the district accountable for the way it has retaliated against Ms. Delzell for doing the right thing. I mean, it's just, how does that happen? Just to show you that there's no class envy indoctrination going on, appeared on Newsmax. A Bloomberg poll, Bloomberg, tax billionaires to save Social Security. An overwhelming 77% of registered voters in seven key states likely to decide the 2024 presidential election are in favor of a billionaire tax to save Social Security. Voters in these swing states are also open to several other ideas that lean heavily on the ultra-rich to keep Social Security solvent for decades. Poll conducted April 8th through 15th, 4,969 voters were questioned in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. More than half are in favor of scaling back benefits for high earners, as well as for taxing wages above the $168,600 cap. Third are in favor of less generous Social Security benefits, and 25% support raising the full retirement age from 67 to 69. Matt Monday, senior manager for Morning Consult, says, a lot of people want the government to take action, but they're not really sure how. But the things that they do feel sure about is that someone else, billionaires, should do it. How about this? How about getting government out of the retirement business? It'll only be able to repay recipients 75% of their promised benefits starting in 2034, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Social Security Trust Fund will only be able to pay recipients 75% of their promised benefits starting in 2034. President Trump has said cutting out waste and fraud is one way to safeguard the future of Social Security and Medicare. But, you know, that's another reason, by the way, that illegals are being let in here. That they're going to be the ones that fund this. If Big Left was smart enough, that's what they would say. These immigrants are who are going to fund Social Security and Medicare down the road, because we don't have enough young people anymore. Certainly not enough smart young people. Biden has proposed a billionaire's tax of 25% on households worth more than $100 million and higher payroll taxes on those making more than $400,000. By the way, you know who finances that? It's not just the taxpayer. It's the businesses as well. Businesses have to match Social Security and Medicare funding. Remember a few years ago, gosh, probably 10, 12 years ago, when they, gosh, longer than that. Remember for a while when they lowered the employee share of Social Security? Remember that? They lowered it from 6.2% to 4.2%, I think it was. The business was still responsible for the full 6.2%, by the way. Can you imagine if they just eliminated the business portion of it? How much better business, small businesses especially, would be able to perform if they didn't have that burden? Now, look, I'm at the age where I'm becoming eligible for Social Security. I'm not going to take it yet, but I mean, and it's easy. Just get the class, because there's a lot more poor people than there are billionaires. Is that that's their assumption that, that they can do it on. And a Mark Cuban or a Bill Gates will always say, oh, yeah, or Warren Buffett, don't give me tax breaks. You ever notice those guys don't refuse them, though? Yeah, exactly. It's a class envy ploy. It's an election ploy. Finally, before the break, we got this from Newsmax. This is, to me, it's bizarre. So Costco is selling $200 million per month, $200 million a month of gold, gold bars. Gold is considered a safe haven. It continues to build momentum. Costco is now selling as much as $200 million worth of 1 ounce, 24-karat gold bars each month, according to a report from Wells Fargo. Their sales of 99.9% pure silver coins are also booming. Last week, gold scaled at an all-time record peak of $2,400, a fourth straight weekly gain. Like I say, while the U.S. economic outlook has improved, jobs are plentiful, and inflation has slowed, inflation remains higher than the Federal Reserve's 2% target. Geopolitical unrest in Ukraine and the Middle East could also be driving investors' interest. Gold's a popular investment during times of economic turmoil. Consumers also trust Costco and like owning tangible bars and coins. They make it convenient. People can physically go in and pick it up, and that's it. Says they're available only to Costco members, but it's attracting new members to Costco. That's why Wells Fargo decided to look into the sales as well. Costco began selling them last September. They have become popular among many demographic groups. The Gen Zers allocating 17% of their portfolio to gold. Available in-store and online. Their gold and silver sell out within hours. Tell me how gold will really work in a shit hits the fan situation. I've always been interested in hearing that. After, a hurricane, which is what I'm familiar with in Central Florida, a big hurricane, you don't see people running around with gold. You see people hoarding gas. You see people hoarding ice. You see people hoarding water, bottled water. I've yet to see anybody hoarding gold. Here's a deceptively simple but rather important question. At least it seems like that to me. Where and how in hell is Costco getting enough gold bars to produce $200 million in sales per month? I mean, are you going to tell me that Costco has, for let's say the next year, amassed $2.4 billion worth of gold bars? How in hell has that happened? How are they able to continually get it? That just makes no sense. Before I go to break, here's a good internet laughy. It's another one where the picture really does it better justice. Biden begins searching through trunk of Corvette, hoping to find nuclear codes. You got to see the picture. It's priceless. Okay. As I said, I'm going to break. I'm going to play a song that's a little bit longer than I typically do, but it's an Allman Brothers tune called In Memory of Elizabeth Reed. I will be back shortly. In about 7 minutes, frankly. incredible, incredible tune from the Allman Brothers, written by the late, great Dickie Betts, in memory of Elizabeth Reed. Again, that first appeared on their second album, Idle Wild South, and then a blockbuster 12-minute version on their Live at Fillmore East album, considered the gold standard of live albums, or certainly one of them. You know what? Let's quick, while I'm sitting here, off the top of my head, the top live albums. That one, REO Speedwagon's live album from the late 70s, Genesis Seconds Out, Yes Songs, Leonard Skinner's, I believe it was called One More From the Road. Those are just a few. Little Feet Waiting for Columbus. Typically, live music doesn't sound as good, or I should say typically, often it doesn't sound as good as the original recordings. But the ones that are the most successful are the ones where the live versions are as good or better than the originals, no doubt. No doubt. Quick internet laughy as I'm coming back from the break. Biden announces plan to win over young voters by getting rid of blockbuster movie rental late fees. The sad part is that one's probably true. He was probably asking that. So if you weren't able to log into the chat room before, you can now, and I think it's because I didn't log in right away because I wanted to not be sitting on a phone connection for so long before the show started. But if you want to come in now. Boyd the Alaskan is in. Again, the number to call in, 319-527-6706. I don't got a lot going on right now. I mean, I got a couple things I'm going to talk about, but if anyone has anything they really want to talk about or anything, comment on anything I've said, that would be awesome. Mike just pointed out, the youth will flock to him on that promise. That's the scary part is, there are people that will. Oh, he'll get rid of fees like that. New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft has pulled his cash from Columbia University. Columbia responded by saying, we're grateful for the money that our donors have given in the past, including Mr. Kraft. But he announced he's pulling support. He's deeply saddened at the virulent hate that continues to grow on campus and throughout our country, and that he is no longer comfortable supporting the university until corrective action is taken. Dozens of anti-Israel terrorists, of course, have been protesting. Person said, Columbia is grateful to Mr. Kraft for his years of generosity and service to Columbia. This is a time of crisis for many members of our community, and we are focused on providing the support they need while keeping our campus safe. Really? Leon Cooperman, billionaire investor in Omega Advisors, CEO, told the New York Post he would pause donations as well. Last October, Leon Cooperman told Fox Business, these kids at these colleges have shit for brains. Said, we have one reliable ally in the Middle East, that's Israel. We only have one democracy in the Middle East, that's Israel. Only one economy tolerant of different people, gays, lesbians, etc., that's Israel. They have no idea what these young kids are doing. Yeah, he's right. So he'll be giving his, moving his giving to other organizations. He's given about $50 million over the years. Another tinfoil hat story for me. Tesla profit falls while GM profit rises. Why? Ironically, sales of gas-powered cars and trucks. Wait a second. Isn't that supposed to be the other way around? How come the FTC and the Department of Justice and the EPA aren't crying foul? We're all supposed to be buying electric cars. The irony, of course, being that Tesla, the preeminent and pioneering and leader in electric car sales, historically, has had their profits fall. GM has had their profits rise because of selling non-electric, i.e. gas-powered cars and trucks. So are they wanting this? I mean, they loved Tesla when Elon Musk was seemingly apolitical. Yeah, in my opinion, it's nothing more, nothing less. They're not screaming about the sales of gas power because they just don't. They don't want Tesla to succeed now. Two stories I've got that go beyond. It just does. It just goes beyond. So, one is from a Twitter post, America First Legal. The Biden administration thinks it can erase the plain meaning of laws passed by Congress decades ago. They insert gender identity into Title IX language, adding biological males to women's rights law, basically. They say, remember, this means that the Biden administration wants to crush your daughter's dreams and put them in close contact with biological men who have mental issues. This is Biden's America. If you are a concerned school administrator, we want to hear from you about how these rules are going to affect your students. You know, it's just, it's unbelievable that they've done this. They've literally just changed it to say, gender identity. It's unbelievable, really. It's unbelievable that they could do this, that they could just add this little thing that says they're literally attempting to erase women as a category with this and allow males to step in. I mean, they're normalizing, and I told you the whole Big Mike theory, and I don't think I'm wrong here. I'm Big Mike, but they're just normalizing it. No matter how much lipstick you put on, you're not a woman. That's Gunter Eagleman. Dominica Delia, a mutual Twitter follow, or ex-follow, she says, Biden's administration is targeting everyone. They're making up their own rules without and laws without hesitation. She's absolutely right. Here's a good meme. Mommy, I think I'm a girl. And mom's saying to the boy, well, you're not. I don't know if I talked about this meme before. It's one where a kid is asking, Mommy, what does DEI stand for? And the answer is, didn't earn it. So there's that one. And I told you, Dopey Joe's other thing about how, you know, it's not fair how women are being treated. This other one is from Libs of TikTok. And this one, this is a Twitter post. A male just won the girls' 200-meter varsity in Sherwood, Oregon. He set a new record for the girls' race. These high school girls just had their dreams stolen from them because the school is catering to the delusions of a boy who pretends to be a girl. He is a cheater. The name is Aiden Gallagher. Here's the sad part. Aiden Gallagher ran 26.49. I'm sorry. At the time, that sucks. I can't tell. Maybe it's 25.49. Either way, I'm faster than those times. Or not, I don't know about now, but I was. I can attest that T. Bodie, who's listening in on the phone, was faster than that. Brother Tommy was faster than that. Way faster. I mean, it's just creepy. It's creepy. Why? Why? Sue from New Mexico, who is listening in on the phones, she sent me a few posts, formerly known as tweets, on X, formerly known as Twitter. The first, and I think this might be in response to me becoming a grandpa, is about 100-year-old Orville Rogers, who recently set a new age group record in running the 60 meters in 19.13 seconds. Remember I told you I used to be faster than that 220 guy or 200 meter guy? At 61.5, I'm not sure I could pull it off now. I just got to tell you that. Another she sent me was a reposted from Riley Gaines. It's about a group of girls in West Virginia who refused to compete in the girls' shot put at a track meet due to the entry of a dude who somehow was competing as a girl. But it's interesting how they did it. So they didn't just refuse to compete. They got up there. They got up to the shot put circle. They would line up and then start their windup, and then they literally walked off out of the shot put circle and handed the shot put off to the next person. And they would do the same thing. So five middle school athletes refused to throw the shot put against male Becky Pepper Jackson. Yeah, they just walked up, walked off. That's awesome. That's risky. Very risky. Yeah, not one Democrat voted for it, by the way. There was a move to ban transgender athletes in girls' sports. Not a single Democrat voted for it. That's just pathetic in and of itself. Third, she sent me is regarding Senators Ted Cruz and John Kennedy. They owned Kelly Robinson, who's a trans activist in the sports realm. They asked her the basic question, if there's no difference between women and men, why are there women's sports? Ted Cruz asked, and John Kennedy went after her on some stuff, and then Ted Cruz just says, you know, she wouldn't answer anything properly. But finally, Ted Cruz said, look, if there's no difference between women and men, why are there women's sports? Fourth one she sent me is about Caitlin Clark. Now, if you don't know by now, Caitlin Clark is the game-changing women's basketball star at my alma mater and the University of Iowa. She was selected as the number one pick in the recent WNBA draft. Sorry, I didn't watch it. I don't watch any of the drafts, and whose contract everyone is lamenting is undervalued, including Dopey Joe. However, let me say this. Quite frankly, the WNBA doesn't have the money to pay Caitlin Clark or anyone else for that matter. Each and every dollar comes from the NBA, which bankrolls the WNBA. WNBA does not make money. It does not command a large enough following to make money, or at least it never has. Yes. The Indiana Fever, Caitlin Clark's new team, has sold out season tickets. Prices have apparently tripled. That's a start. Trust me, though, right now Caitlin Clark has much more lucrative deals than the WNBA can ever pay her. If and when the WNBA generates fan and thus economic interest, then people can whine about her contract. Yes, she will change the game, and yes, she will increase the fan following. But in reality, aside from Caitlin Clark, the people making out like bandits aren't her fellow WNBA players or coaches or staffers. It's right now it's the McCaffrey brothers. Caitlin Clark is dating Connor McCaffrey. He's the oldest son of Iowa men's basketball coach Fran McCaffrey. Connor has miraculously gotten a job with the Indiana Pacers. Then again, as the oldest ever point guard in the history of Iowa basketball, I guess he rates the job. He was 27 by the time he finished his career. And younger brother Patrick, who is 6'9" of unrealized and or overrated potential, he's transferred to Butler University, which also happens to be in Indianapolis, where he will presumably suddenly become a star on the hardwood. In reality, it's probably a nice fresh start for the McCaffrey brothers. And it's great in a weird way that Caitlin Clark has enough of a following to get that for the McCaffrey brothers. In the meantime, unless and until the WNBA actually generates a sustained, consistent profit, she probably just let Caitlin be Caitlin. Rake in her very much hard-earned endorsement deals. Watch her develop over the next several years as a player, including this summer in the Olympics. Oh, by the way, as of today or maybe yesterday, Caitlin Clark is now the first person in the 94-year history of the Sullivan Award to win it twice. She is not the first Hawkeye, however, to win it. Iowa wrestler Spencer Lee, for one, won it back in 2019. It used to be for the best amateur athlete. Now it's for, quote, college and Olympic level. Yeah, how times have changed. But yeah, Caitlin Clark is the first two-time winner. Reggie Bush is getting his Heisman Trophy back. changed since he had it lost it in 2010. Blah, blah, blah. Look, he had an unfair advantage. People don't believe this, but his parents getting rent-free and all that, they never had to worry. They never had to worry. Speaking of college football, Iowa quarterback Deacon Hill, a.k.a. DEFCON Hill, started most last season after Cade McNamara went down, entered the transfer portal yesterday. He started our final nine games last year, including the Big Ten Championship game and the Citrus Bowl against Tennessee. 122 of 251, so less than 50%. 1,152 yards, 5 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. He did add 2 rushing touchdowns. How? I have no idea. Six-three, 258 pounds. He started his career at Wisconsin. Was there for 2 years before entering the portal and coming to Iowa. So, yeah, DEFCON has entered the portal. Yeah, DEFCON has, I mean, it kind of shocked a lot of people. Now, one person, John Miller, and John's not a bad guy. Don't get me wrong. John's an okay guy, but John's like, did the coaches know about this? I would guess some of the coaches were praying for this. Now, it's anybody's guess what happened. He did supposedly get a lot of reps. He was getting first-team reps in spring ball. But apparently, later it was noted that Marco Linez got more of first-team reps, got more reps overall. Look, I don't blame him in a lot of ways. He was thrust into a very untenable situation. But this is for the best, folks. For Hawkeye fans, look, it's for the best. The kid is a lightning rod. I don't blame him for what happened. It's not fair to put it all on him. But the fact of the matter is, he just didn't. He's not a starting quarterback. So I got a couple callers. I'm going to see if I can get them on. By the way, welcome Joe Gibson to the chat room as well. I'm going to take Sue from New Mexico. Sue, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you. Thank you for putting out about those roses that are going to be laid at Memorial Day. I was going to tell you, Caitlin Clark, I think in the last couple of days, she has secured a multi-million dollar deal with Nike. So she's already reaping, you know, rewards.
Oh, no, she was actually getting it while she was in school. Yeah, and that's why I say, you know, everybody that's getting on the whole WNBA contract, that's standard for the WNBA. It doesn't make money. You can't very well... You know, I mean, it's like you mentioned you sent that to me today about Tiger getting $100 million loyalty bonus from the PGA. I thought all the PGA players had been saying they have to do something to get to join with LIV Golf because they don't have enough money anymore. They're not going to make money. And here they are getting loyalty bonuses all of a sudden.
Oh yeah.
So I'm feeling a lot less.
They always will. You know, I mean, that's just sports and the way sports work, because these are the people who draw people in to watch them. And, you know, Tiger Woods, my daughter, when she was young, absolutely adored Tiger Woods. She had a T-shirt of him and everything you could imagine, you know. And it doesn't matter who or where he is now, they still will draw people in to watch him. But, you know, I wanted to say something about Title IX. And people who didn't grow up before Title IX came in, let me tell you what it was like. I was a female. I was in a Class A school. Do you know what my PE was? We would go to the gym, sit down, and watch the boys. practice basketball or whatever. And then in my junior, or it was my senior year, Title IX came in. And, boy, the boys were so angry, you know. But anyway, I was able to experience, and I ran track. And when I went to college, I was on the first UNM track team. You have no idea what that was like. Then we had to share the gym with the UNM male athletes. They hated us. And I had guns thrown at me. I can't even describe the things those male athletes did to us as women, because we had got to use their weight room, you know. And yep. And so women really fought to get where we were. You have no idea how horrible it was to grow up. And your PE and everything was watching the boys, you know, and they really fought for it. And then here we had a chance, you know, and those of us who could, we took that chance. And it was absolutely wonderful. And now, because of a population that is less, what is it, 0.99% of the United States, they're destroying it. And I am so angry. And that's my rant. And I'll let someone else get on.
I agree totally, Sue. You know, it's not just that people fought for Title IX. I mean, the people that fought for Title IX literally did that with a sacrifice. Most of them were not involved in sports. They never had a chance. They were past their prime in being able to compete, and yet they still made that sacrifice. They were ridiculed. And I get some of the resentment from some of the players, because at various colleges, men's sports programs have been canceled because of Title IX. In other words, it's got to be fair and equitable. And that's crazy, too. You know, I mean, I'm not saying Title IX is bad, but I'm saying when you start manufacturing and say there has to be the same number of sports and the same, you know, that wasn't even its original intent. It's what it became. But, you know, but people work too hard for it to simply have the stroke of a pen and the whim of some idiot change it and change the intent and change the scope. I mean, did you know when you were fighting for Title IX, were you hoping you'd get a shot at seeing some guy in the locker room, in the woman's locker room? No. I mean, I certainly don't think you were, you know?
No. No, but, you know, actually, that did happen in college.
Because having the
circumstances, I'm talking, you know, like the first, when it first came into effect and what happened in colleges, and colleges weren't set up for Title IX, and so you shared, and, you know, so you did a lot of stuff. Now, you know, of course, we showered differently. We had to shower at a different place and everything. So there was none of that. But there was a lot of sharing, and there was a lot of resentment by the male athletes that they even had to share. They were still getting their money. You know, our warm-up suit was the previous basketball's warm-up suits from the year before, and UNM Lobos were, you know, national at that time, and they had tailors take them up so they would even fit us. But it's just the things women went through, and, you know, I can't get over these transgender men, and they get up there and they accept the award. I would be ashamed.
That a parent can sit there, you know, they talked about the one couple of guys, I think it was Connecticut, and Steve Dace pointed out, one, he said it's a mental disease, but he pointed out in this way, he said, when a parent is there yelling, "That's my girl," you kind of know that the whole rational thought process has hit the skids. I mean, when a parent's actually saying that's my girl, But their girl isn't a girl, number one. And number two, hasn't had any surgery, hasn't had – it's literally a dude with facial hair wearing a woman's tracksuit. That's messed up. And that's a mental disease. It is literally a mental disease.
And you know what is the saddest? Is that they're taking the scholarships away from women. They're getting the scholarships that they have no right to. And the
yeah.
women are being pushed the wayside. And, you know, they were with all through their high school, you know, probably middle school, and into their college years. And they needed those scholarships to help fund their college careers, you know, get a degree.
Yeah.
And then here you have these men come and take away their scholarships. It's, oh, well, I could go on for hours here. It really gets
it's
me.
It's repulsive.
Anyway, thank you so much, Hank.
Thanks, Sue. Thank you, and we'll talk to you later. A great call for Sue. Sue has always been reaching out on X and brings a lot of good stuff, brings a lot of good stories, but also just, you know, has her head on her shoulders and has it on straight. I mean, you know, I would love to say that everything she said was new. It's not new. We know this, but, you know, you have to hear it from a female. How there are females who aren't upset by this is mind-boggling. Got another caller. Mike, how you doing?
Doing well, Hank. How's it going?
Oh, well, hey, the show worked tonight, so can't get too mad.
Yeah, you step ahead already there. Yeah, I was just going to call in, and I wanted to do a quick comment on this whole Palestinian protest stuff that's been going on all over the campuses. But I do want to say that I think, you know, what you guys were talking about, you and Sue, spot on with Title IX and everything, and it's, you know, just what a disgrace that these, like you're pointing out, not one Democrat would vote to basically, you know, uphold the purpose of Title IX, which is to elevate women's sports, but they can't get away from the transgender stuff. But going back to the Palestinian thing, I mean, you know, in some ways I was thinking, this is not new. The Palestinians have been a pet project of the loony left on college campuses across the nation going back to our time in the 80s. I remember, I'm sure you remember when we were having a dispute with a tenants dispute, and we were looking for tenants' rights down at the union one day. We go down there, and I remember sticking my head into an office. I thought, like I said, is this tenants' rights? And there's some idiot over there going, no, man, Palestinian solidarity. And I just thought, okay, well, you have fun with that one. But they were around then.
They were around.
And I think I remember some protests going on at Iowa, you know, that were pro-Palestine, anti-Israel. It's like the classic liberal meme that Israel's a bunch of oppressors and the Palestinians are the oppressed. But what's kind of changed now is that you've got this, they've gone from being pro-Palestinian to being pro-Hamas. And that's really disturbing when you consider particularly what happened on October 7th. And they're just a bunch of fact deniers. They don't want to admit what happened on October 7th. They will not admit it. And it just makes you wonder where they're getting this. I guess we kind of know. It's coming from the faculty situation. This is emphasizing it. The faculty situation in these major universities throughout the country is just, it's gone off the deep end. There's no diversity. It's all just loony left. And I'm sure that a large chunk of these people protesting are faculty and non-students too. So, you know, it's been around a long time. They lie dormant for a while, and then when anything happens or when they get an excuse, it just blows up, and it's getting more and more militant, and that's what's disturbing. Anyway,
well, and I think we're talking about people that are, you said a lot of them aren't students or I think the people that are being paid to do it. I think there's money being given to these people to do
that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's beyond sick. It really is. I mean, I don't know how people can – I mean, God, how sad is your life that you got to get paid to go be a protester for this kind of thing, you know? It's just, you think about, I mean, think about that, really. I mean, I look,
well,
I'm not
like
saying that I would rather work at Walmart, but –
We used to talk in the, you know, when we were at Iowa in the 80s, that there was all these holdouts that were forever in graduate school who were from the 60s crowd, you know, trapped in the 60s and can't get out and stuff. And they manifested themselves on campus. A lot of them were in that new, remember that new wave crowd that was always like running student government and everything? Complete loons back then. I wonder, I'm sure they probably look pretty tame compared to what's going on now. And I haven't even heard, I kind of wondered, I don't know if you've heard anything. Have there been any protests on our old alma mater? You'd think there would
be.
You'd think they'd be coming out of the woodwork.
I'm sure there are some, but I think the other thing is, I don't think you have it's flyover country, so they don't care. You know what I mean? George Soros doesn't really care about that. He's not really concerned with what's happening in the Midwest. You know, Barack Obama a little. Yeah, I think it's just not important enough to him. I think that's what it boils down to. You know, I think you know it's not. I mean, there's a huge difference in the elitist mind between the University of Iowa and Columbia. In their mind, it's like, hey, man, we scored a real coup. We got people protesting at Columbia. When it really boils down to, you know, they don't think enough of it.
Yeah, you know, I've got a niece that's at MIT. And MIT, basically, they're adjacent and almost a co-college, I don't know if you know this, with Harvard.
Yeah.
And they can take, they can interchange classes and stuff. Well, anyway, MIT is not a big, you know, it's basically a bunch of nerds and closet cases, let's admit it, you know, but, you know, really, really high-end scientific genius types going there. But Harvard, it was just announced the other day that they closed down Harvard Yard for the entire week.
Yeah.
They shut it down.
Bodie's
so obviously there's been some unrest there.
Yeah. T. Bodie's on the phone, so I'm going to take him because he might know what's going on in Iowa. Hold on just a second.
Yeah.
T. Bodie, what's up?
I thought I was in the queue like a half hour ago when you were talking about music. So let me take this off speakerphone here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you hear me? So they are protesting down in Iowa City. You would expect nothing less. Whether they go all night with the vigils and stuff, I don't know. But they certainly have a gathering in front of the old Capitol.
The Pentecrest. Yeah, the Pentecrest. Yeah, I kind of figured there'd be a few at least. Probably some of the very same people that we walked past when they were screaming at Brother Jed and all the other
stuff.
Yeah, no,
they're still there.
The 6-foot guy with the mohawk and the Nazi jacket.
He's probably there.
Guys, remember back in the day, it was South Africa was the big deal. I remember walking along the Pentecrest one day, going from one class. I think I was trying to walk over to where the CAM buses were at. I came out of a class, and there's a big sit-in going on over, you know, where the administration building was on the on the Pentecrest there. And guess who's sitting there in the sit-in? My sister Sarah. Mike, how's it going? I go, what are you doing? Oh, we're protesting in South Africa. We need to divest. I go, where did you get this crap from? She was, remember that Paul Carberry guy that she was
Don't use Van. Let's not use Van.
I think the Mohawk was there.
Yeah. Spike. Spike was part of that.
It's just something to do when you're in college.
So we're going to go over.
Let me go back.
So anybody who's on the phones, we're going to be on. So we're going over time, and anybody on phones is going to still be able to hear. If anyone online's not going to, but so we're going to keep it going. So,
Frampton comes alive, and for those that think Kiss was something, Kiss 2 or Kiss Alive was back in the
Kiss
day.
Kiss Alive was another great one.
I want to touch on Title IX stuff and Title VII. Megyn Kelly this week has a tremendous podcast with a couple of notary interviews in there. and she is pissed about it. And it's worth going, looking her up and following that. Certainly,
oh, thank
you. Crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't know whatever,
sure.
whatever else there was that I was going to comment on, but, you know, any movement on that
thing.
Sullivan today? Any movement on the Northwestern quarterback Sullivan?
No. No, I've not seen anything. All I know is DEFCON entered the portal.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So,
right.
Like I said, I wouldn't be. I'm sure half the staff was praying for it. So.
Well,
and, you know,
as I mentioned,
it's all rumor. It's scuttlebutt, but about Sullivan, but it makes sense if you think about it.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely
yeah.
does.
Yeah.
Hey, we got another caller. I'm going to bring in. It's a Skype caller, so I'm just going to see. Hey, Skype caller, you're on Hank Jones Poly Sports. Who's this?
Yes, my friends. This is Brother Mike from Singapore. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, fine. Thank you. You know, your shows are very good, and Daduk show, we never can hear it. Whenever we want to call Daduk and ask him questions, we never have opportunities. So, I hope you guys fix that one when Daduk comes Saturday, usually.
You mean Usama? Daduk?
Yes. He's my good friend, too. Yes, sir. We love you,
okay.
too. So, I
yeah,
want
he's,
to...
He's got a great show on Saturday night.
Yes. But I want to tell you about what's going on in universities, if I may.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, this, you know, all this, right now Los Angeles is also UCLA and other universities in Los Angeles has risen up, the Palestinians, and, you know, in many other cities as well, too. Suddenly, it was only three universities. Now it's going to pretty much every state very soon. And remember, IRGC, they sneak in into our country about the last 3 months. Also, they are, you know, PLO, they are supporters of the Ayatollahs, and Ayatollah loves PLO, so Palestinian.
Yeah.
So therefore, this is an operation done by Ayatollahs. They are trying to become, you know, helping to BLM and Antifa, including onto that, and they're going to create a martial law in this country very soon. What do you think, sir?
Well, I don't doubt that they are trying to do that. I don't doubt that that's their intent. Whether or not they will succeed, that's another matter. I don't know that there's enough I don't know that there's enough people that will stand still for it. I think people are just not going to – I think the American people will not stand still for it. I really believe that.
Me too, because, you know, it was only three. Now it's Los Angeles included. Oregon will be included. I mean, everywhere are kind of universities are going to be closed. And so it's really – peaceful demonstration, I have no problem, you have no problem with it. But
no.
Once it comes to this point, the event that they're occupying our country like that, we all have a big problem, my friends. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do. And I think, you know, as you said, peaceful protest, but that's not what we're seeing. We're seeing Jewish students who are threatened. We are seeing non-Jewish students, but non-Muslim students. In other words, their thing is you're either for us or you're against us. And the only way you can be for them is to conform to their ideology. I would not say their religion because it's I hesitate to call it a religion when, in fact, you know, the tyrannical Muslim element is just that. It's tyrannical. It has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do with
Hank, can I say to Brother Mike too, it is not about the it's gone from being about the Palestinian cause to being pro Hamas. And that's what the problem really is. And
absolutely.
I mean, I think there can be sympathy for the Palestinians who want to, you know, peacefully have their own, whether it's a country or their own areas to govern themselves. And I think it would be possible, but when you have the events of what happened on October 7th, it just undermines everything. And that's the problem.
Well, I think you
absolutely.
But Mike, you said that back then. Mike, you said it back when it happened. When that happened, two-state solution was off the table. I think.
Because Hamas is not going to be something that the Israelis will ever tolerate in a state that rests side by side with them.
Right. And they shouldn't, frankly. They should not. So.
And remember, the Ayatollah Khomeini, all of them, they were in Gaza before, and they were trained by Yasser Arafat as a terrorist, and now they occupied Iranian land, land of Aryan nation, land of the Cyrus the Great, for 46 years. And also they made the attack on Israel too. Everywhere you go is a fingerprint of Ayatollah, not Iranian. Iranian, 90%, they hate Ayatollahs and they want regime change, but unfortunately, because they don't have guns and ammunition, they cannot overthrow that the bloody regime of the Ayatollahs. But I want all of you guys know, whenever you see, you know, the news, it says Iran attack Israel. No. Please change it in your system. Say, okay, Ayatollahs attack Israel, for example. Yeah. Then it makes more sense. Because once you say the whole country, then we Iranian American who have been here established and we have sent our daughters and sons into Navy, military, etc. In this country, and we have a top gun. We have a top gun of F-35 are Iranian already. So then it will be best for us, you know. And I want you guys always please differentiate. Iranians are different than Ayatollahs.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I think that's a good thing to you know say that because I do believe that's true. I think a democratically elected government in Iran would be a friend of Israel, not an enemy.
Yeah, and I think as Brother Mike mentioned, you know, it's not Iran. And in fact, one of the articles I read, I did not quote, you know, it did say Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps. It wasn't saying the country of, you know, they were citing it as Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps. That's who's perpetrating and that's who's carrying this out. It is not the Iranian people. It is not the, you know, whereas in Hamas, you can really say in the Gaza region that it is all of, you know, it's not just a select few that are carrying this out. It is a lot of them that are sympathetic. That's not the case in Iran. They are, as Brother Mike says, 90% of them are dead against what the regime has become over there.
Absolutely. And yes, you're right. With the Hamas, with the Gaza, all the Gazaians or Hamas, old Hamas or Gazaia. You know, there is no question about it. And you know, whenever there is a big demonstration in Iran before for the hijab and other freedoms and et cetera, you know what happened? Their own revolutionary guards could not do that much anything to the people because people are chanting, "You guys are part of us. We are part of you guys." So kind of they could not do much. Then right away they brought from Gaza and Hezbollah from Lebanon. They brought them by the plane, bunch of the godless people. And then they give them the arms. They said, "You guys go take care of all this thing." And then so many Iranian killed, so many, et cetera, as we see it on the TV station. We have it on the YouTube, et cetera. But again, so people in Iran, they tried for 46 years. They cannot succeed. There is no political solution in Iran at this time unless Israel does what it needs to be done, use of an EMP on Iran, on top of the Ayatollahs, and let the electric off for a couple of years, 2 years, so they cannot make any more atom bombs. Because Iran has already 2 dozen of atom bombs. We know that. But very soon, even they said that this by end of this week, they make more. So how much can we wait, you know? Israel must do something also to help to freedom, loving people of Iran, because we are sick and tired of this bloody hell regime. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, spot on. Absolutely spot on.
Hank, can I say I'm going to have to sign off and run here, but I really like what Brother Mike had to say. Maybe he'll be a good new addition to the show. He brings a good perspective to things.
Yeah, absolutely. 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 So, well, guys, I've got to cut out on that note because I do have plans. My wife and I are going to go get a little exercise, believe it or not. We're going to go play pickleball. That's our big Wednesday plan these days. So.
Too much information.
That's one step away from the shuffleboard court. You know, you got to be careful there.
Yeah, it's dangerously close, I fear. Yeah, you guys aren't wrong. So, well, Brother Mike, thank you for your call, and we hope to hear more from you. Mike and T-Bodie, of course, thanks. And T-Bodie, I understand we have a headliner for a celebration.
We love you too, because your show is number one, and Daduk, I am servant of the Daduk as well too. Whatever he tells the truth, but unfortunately people cannot hear it. And you know, many times I came, but you guys missed me. I mean, you guys said, well, go ahead in the chat room, say who is it. Sometimes we cannot do that because, you know. So please, if when you see me, the same numbers, at least you can screen the call behind, and then you can bring me. I would be more than glad to be on your shows most of time, sir. And thank you very
much. Well, thank you. Thanks, you guys. You all have a good night, and we are signing off for those that are still able to listen via phone. Thanks for being here, Sue. Mike, Brother Mike, T. Bodie, Boyd was in earlier, Joe Gibson in the chat room, and Brother Mike, all of you, thank you guys. And we will be back next week at 6 o'clock. Have a good one, folks.
Shalom. Shalom, Israel.
Shalom.